It's a pleasure to be on Coast to Coast AM in any case, but it's especially pleasurable to be on the air with Jesse Ventura. His book, They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK. 63, get it? Probably if we looked harder, there'd be 1,963 reasons to believe there was a conspiracy to assassinate JFK. Isn't it just amazing? The truth is there, so the hope is to put forth a lie. And then, once it's been put forth enough, the truth is erased, replaced with the lie, and then the lie becomes the truth. Reading from his book, the medical consensus from all the doctors who treated President Kennedy's wounds in Dallas clearly confirms the massive exit wound at the back of the head. At the back of his head. Oh, no. No, he was shot from behind by Lee Harvey Oswald. No. In all, at least eight of the treating physicians at Parkland Hospital confirmed on record that there was a huge exit wound at the rear of the president's head. The names of the doctors were Dr. Malcolm Perry, Charles Crenshaw, Charles Day Carrico, Richard Delaney, Ronald Jones, Robert McClellan, Paul Peterson, Kenneth E. Salyer. The exit wound at the back of the head was also confirmed by FBI Special Agent Frank O'Neill and Secret Service Special Agent Clint Hill. We'll be right back with Jesse Ventura in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. Jesse Ventura, we know that all of the cover-ups aided and abetted by the mainstream media have just been rampant for years. Everything from the sound test in downtown Dallas. Oh, yeah, definitely. It was just one rifle. It was just three shots. To the, those so-called FBI surveillance films that show people in the school book depository to the left of the window where Oswald was supposed to be, on the floor above, on the floor below. Oh, these are just routine films. It's like, what? You run this kind of film footage everywhere he goes? No. And all these people that for years have been rumored to have been present there to observe the big event. I mean, this was a big deal. So we know that the official story is nothing but rubbish. Why do you think he was assassinated?
Well, there could be many reasons, because when Jack Kennedy got into the presidency, he got a lot of enemies by what he wanted to do. He got enemies in the mafia, because there's always the tale that Joe Kennedy made a deal with Sam Giancana to bring Illinois to help elect Jack president. And then Bobby Kennedy, of course, as attorney general, went after the mafia. He deported Carlos Marcello, the mafia kingpin in New Orleans. And so the mafia felt that they had been betrayed. So they were angry. If you look at the military-industrial complex, the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Pentagon, they wanted to go to war in Cuba. Okay, he inherited the Bay of Pigs. It was being planned during the Eisenhower administration. They, of course, felt Nixon would be elected so they could go right ahead with their plans. Well, the fly in the ointment came when Jack Kennedy got elected, but Kennedy went along with it. But he would not give U.S. military support when they did the invasion. So they felt betrayed on that, the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs. And also the fact that there would have been no Vietnam, because John Kennedy had already ordered the first 1,000 advisors out of Vietnam, and he had told people, we will be completely out of Vietnam by 65 after I'm reelected. Then you had civil rights. Kennedy was the first president that was giving equal rights to African Americans in our country, or wanted to. Well, you know that didn't sit too well down in the Deep South. And the list goes on and on of enemies that Jack Kennedy had. And then the one closest to him, Lyndon Baines Johnson. There was very big speculation that Kennedy was going to drop Johnson from the ticket in 64, because Lyndon Johnson was neck deep in two major scandals in Texas, the Billy Saul Estes and the Bobby Baker thing. And so he was excess baggage, and Lyndon Johnson's political career could very well have ended at that point. Well, Lyndon always had his eye on being president, and the easiest way for him to be president, of course, was to eliminate Kennedy, and then he would become the president. So there were multi people, and there's probably even more that that I'm forgetting right now, because where I'm at, it's 2 o'clock in the morning right now. And so, but those are just a few. He probably had more enemies internally than he had internationally. In fact, Kennedy was also looking for detente with the Russians. He wanted to end the Cold War by 1965. And one of the great things that that I've learned is there's a great book called JFK and the Unspeakable. And the author is Douglas, and he's a Catholic theologian. And he went to the Vatican, and he found bombshell documents there that what occurred after the Cuban Missile Crisis. Both Kennedy and Khrushchev realized, Nikita Khrushchev, that they were on the brink of destroying the world, but they also realized that they could bring peace. Well, through the documents in the Vatican, Kennedy, unbeknownst to both governments, Kennedy and Khrushchev were back-channel communicating with each other. And they both had agreed they were going to end the Cold War by 65, and they were using the Pope John, as the intermediary between it. And author Douglas discovered these documents and all of it in the Vatican archives. And that was, to me, a bombshell. Imagine how the world would be different today if there would have been no Vietnam War and if the Cold War had ended in 65.
Well, a lot of people would have made a lot less money. Is that what this is all about?
Money was spent on the Cold War by the military-industrial complex and Vietnam. So, you know, John Kennedy had a lot of enemies and a lot of people that wanted him out. Plus, the bigger factor, Kennedy absolutely would have been reelected. His popularity was at its peak at that time, and he would have done another 4 years. And then, of course, you would have had the possibility that Bobby Kennedy would have followed him as president for another 8 years. So, theoretically, you could have very well had 16 years of uninterrupted Kennedy presidency. And there were people out there that were not going to allow that to happen.
Do you feel he was the victim of an ongoing, however subtle it might have been, PR smear? Because something really rather tragic. I have stated many times on this program that I think the killing of JFK was what broke the country's heart. And it's been sort of a downhill slide in faith and duty and honor and responsibility and love of country and everything else ever since. I mean, the whole hippie movement and the... I mean, this country came very close to a revolution in 1969, this unending Vietnam conflict, and everybody was just numbed by it.
Well, it certainly, I don't think, had a positive attitude on it. Now, and like I said earlier, I think the country was in denial. They didn't want to admit that a coup d'etat took place that day. And so by blaming it on a lone nut assassin like Lee Harvey Oswald, it gave the country an out. It gave them someone to hate. Lee Oswald's children are now grown adults, and they've probably had to assume his two daughters' other names and all this stuff. And I think it's high time that we correct history and that they know today that their father was not the villain that our history books and our mainstream media have made him out to be for 50 years now.
Is there anything in your book about his JFK was reputed to want to either investigate or utterly get rid of CIA?
Oh, he had made statements after the Bay of Pigs. In fact, he fired Alan Dulles, Cabell, and I forget the third, the top three guys of the CIA. And I forgot to mention them. In that earlier, who wanted him out. And he made the statement because he was so angry. He said, they lied to me, and the CIA is supposed to be the intelligence gathering unit for the president. Kennedy said, they lied to me, and I'm going to break them into 1,000 pieces. That was a quote he did. Well, unfortunately, they may have killed him and broke him into 1,000 pieces.
Do you believe, as many people do, that John F. Kennedy was our last real president?
I believe this. I believe, in my opinion, in my lifetime, he's our greatest president. And you know how I can determine that? He served the shortest term, never even completing one. The best president served the least amount of time, in my opinion.
That's interesting. That's an interesting observation. Yes, he did. And you notice what, not even barely 6 months later, we went into Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. The first thing Lyndon Johnson did was reverse Kennedy's executive order. Kennedy had signed an executive order. L. Fletcher Prouty was there. Colonel Prouty witnessed it, ordering the first 1,000 advisors out of Vietnam. And then I'll give you another good one. I do a lot of reading when I live down in Mexico in the winter rather than watching TV. And I read a book called LBJ, The First 24 Hours.
Yes.
And there was something in there that the average person wouldn't even pay mind to, but when I read it, it sent chills up and down my spine, especially having been a former governor. Imagine this scenario now. LBJ's the new president. He flies back to Washington, and in the morning, he has his first meeting with Kennedy's cabinet, because Kennedy's cabinet is still intact, correct? Now, what would the topic of discussion should be at that first meeting? It should be the state of the state, the state of the union. Where are we at? What, right? The economy, whatever else.
Sure.
No. His first meeting, according to this book, with Kennedy's cabinet, the major topic of the meeting was the Vietnam War. That was not a war yet. Now, why would your first topic be a war that isn't a war yet? You could understand if we were in the middle of the Vietnam War how it could have been the major topic. But the only thing we had there at that point, we had no boots on the ground. We had advisors there, which technically kind of are boots on the ground, but we officially didn't have the United States Marine Corps, the U.S. Army, or what in any force there fighting a war.
Yeah.
And that was the first topic of discussion as the first president. That tells you exactly where the priorities were. And then Johnson, of course, immediately reversed that presidential executive order. And then, of course, we had the now false flag Gulf of Tonkin incident. And that's what put our troops into Vietnam, killed 58,000 of my generation, and untold probably how many million Vietnamese died, all over an event that never occurred.
Jesse, is this about hating communism? I remember seeing these films. All these citizens, particularly in Dallas, which for a long time was labeled the city of hate, the city that killed Kennedy and so forth. And I was going to mention earlier in my classroom when the announcement was made, because the bell rang early and we went in, what's up with this? They're cutting our recess short. And then the announcement was made. Well, people started, the little girls in my class started crying, and a cheer went up down the hall. It was obviously the boys doing this. And I thought, what is the meaning of this? Then as I saw these, these various news stories about the reaction of various citizens, with quotes around that word, to the president's visit here, they were just, there was just one ugly commentary after another about he's soft on communism, or he's, I just don't under, and I'm beginning to think that was an orchestrated and or otherwise contrived negative PR blitz on him before he even got here.
You know what I find interesting? When I go to Los Angeles, for some reason, and I have cars, that drive me around most of the time. I'm at that level now to where, people pay to, I don't have to take taxi cabs. And for the most part, for some reason, when I go to L.A., there's a mass of drivers, the executive cars, limo drivers, are all Russians who have now come here. And they're all about our age. Well, I always like to engage them in conversation, and I've asked them, and every one of them have said the same thing to this question. I said, during the Cold War, as a citizen of the Soviet Union, what were you being told? And to a man, they've all told me, we were being told that we had to stop the United States imperialists from taking over the world. Well, what were they telling us here? At the same time they were telling us here, we had to stop the domino effect of communism from taking over the world. I have to believe that that was planned on high to both of our nation's peoples, the Soviets and us, to get us to hate each other so that they could have their Cold War. Because the Russian people were being told the identical same thing we were being told. We must stop the imperialists from taking over the world. And here, we must stop the communists, the domino effect of communism. And it's ironic because my father, and I'm a rare family because my mother and father were both World War II veterans. And not too many people can say their mom was a World War II veteran. My mother was a nurse in North Africa. And my father was opposed to the Vietnam War before the hippies were. And I would come home from school selling what I was being taught, the domino effect of communism. My dad looked at me and said, "That's all BS." He said, "Oh, somebody's making big money. That's the only reason we're over there."
That's exactly what my dad told me. He said, "You're not going to that." He said, "Well, told me later."
And I was fortunate enough to come back home and be able to tell my father, "You know what, Dad, you were exactly right." And he looked at me and said, "Well, I'm sorry you had to learn about it the hard way." But and I've told people today, my dad passed away way back in 1991 because he got married at the age of 40. And so I had a bit of an older father than everyone else did. But I always like to tell people, you know, my dad gets smarter every day.
Yeah, of course.
Because the things he told me, I look back on today, he told me the exact things back then, and here was a guy only with an eighth grade education. Hey, I'll tell you another quick story. I came home once at 16, and my dad says to me at that age, he says, "You know, all politicians are crooks." And I looked at him and said, "Come on, Dad." I said, "They can't all be crooks." He said, "Yes, they can. You want to know why?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Because they spend $1 million for a job that only pays $100,000.
Right.
And when you know, in his very simplified way of looking at it, I had to sit back and go, you know, he's right. But today, if my dad would have been alive when I became governor, he could say his son wasn't a crook. You know why? They don't like to talk about this, but I actually spent less money than I made to become governor of Minnesota. I only raised and spent $300,000 to become the governor of Minnesota, and I made $120,000 a year, which if my Roosevelt High School math is correct, that means I made $480,000 and I only spent $300,000 to get it.
Why did you just turn away from politics? Did you just get sick of it?
No, actually, I didn't go public with this, but I only did one term because my wife was had some health difficulties at the time. And I will put my wife ahead of holding any of these jobs. And I didn't want, it was private, I did not want the press delving into it, so I kept quiet about it. And I just quietly said, no, I'm not going to seek re-election. But I will say on the humorous side, after spending 4 years with the Democrats and Republicans, you truly feel like you need a shower.
Yeah. Take a bath in Lysol. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I got to tell you something, and I hope you'll take this the right way. In a world of scared, sniveling little weenies, you are a man. And it is, I'm really, really proud to be able to talk with you on this program about these things. We have calls lined up. A bunch of people want to talk to you. I'd personally rather hear you talk. Of course, we adore the listeners, but we'll get a couple of three calls in with you when we come back, because I know it's late where I am, but it's later where you are, okay?
Very good.
All right, we'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. The book is They Killed Our President, 63 Reasons to Believe There Was a Conspiracy to Assassinate JFK. We'll be right back. All right, let's just jump right back into this rather than taking the little floating break that we normally do, because we're getting short on time and I want to talk with Jesse Ventura some more. You know, Bobby walked around like somebody had walked over his grave. He already had that look on his face in the years that followed his brother's assassination. And then I'm wondering, do you think that that deal with Chappaquiddick was a setup to make sure Ted kept quiet?
I don't know. Or was Ted supposed to die too, and he survived? Wow. Think of that for a moment. And then, of course, they had him either way because of Mary Jo Kopechne dying. sitting in the car, so that politically killed him, so he could never be the president after that. So, you know, they didn't actually physically kill him, if that was indeed. But that's one of the conspiracy theories that floats around out there, was that, you know, Ted was supposed to die at Chappaquiddick, and then, of course, Bobby was killed by allegedly Sirhan Sirhan, which everybody knows that should be questioned also, and more shots were fired than what Sirhan's gun could hold.
You know, Skymaster Brian there at LA Command asked an interesting question. He said, why do you think this Kennedy thing won't go away? And I'm thinking it's because we want to know and get past, at some point, have closure with the event that broke the country's heart. Now, that may be a little sentimental, but what do you think about it?
I think you're right. I think exactly that. You know, I'm a sucker for the truth, and I don't like to be lied to. And when you start reading it, and I challenge anyone to read this book. I mean, it's so blatantly obvious when you see the facts of the case. And as I said, people always say, well, somebody would have talked, you know, if there had been a conspiracy. People have talked. It's just the mainstream media, again, won't talk about that people have talked. And that's the point of writing my book, is I won't let it die, you know, until we get the truth, or until at least somebody acknowledges that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the killer officially. And they have. I mean, the House Select Committee on assassinations in the mid-70s completely concluded that President John F. Kennedy was the victim of a conspiracy. And then they turned it over to the Justice Department. And unfortunately, like I wrote in the book, the U.S. House of Representatives investigating the assassination and concluded that JFK was probably assassinated as the result of a conspiracy. And they turn it over to the Justice Department, and the Justice Department does nothing. And people need to understand, murder has no statute of limitations on it. The other thing that's unique is the car itself. Now, anybody that watches TV knows that at a crime scene, out goes the yellow tape. No one's allowed into the crime scene until forensic and all the scientific evidence can be gathered before they'll remove the yellow tape. The car was a crime scene. Monday morning, the president's killed on Friday. Monday morning, that car is up in Detroit, Michigan at the Ford plant being totally cleaned and revamped by the orders of Lyndon Baines Johnson. Now, that's obstruction of justice. Why is even the president allowed to break the law?
What became of that car?
Oh, they revamped the whole thing. They put new upholstery in it. I don't know after that, but we talk about it in the book, because there's a witness at the Ford plant who said he went into this special area that they had there, and he was stunned. Monday morning, he walked in, and lo and behold, there was the Kennedy limousine with the windshield pulled out. They were ripping the seats apart and destroying all the evidence and revamping the car, and I don't know what exactly ever became of it.
Do we know what color it was by chance? It's just
black,
a little aside. Black, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It was dark color. All the pictures, they're usually black and white photos, but they showed as being very dark. So I would assume it was a black limousine, a black big Lincoln.
Well, I had a reason for asking that question, but I'll ask it to you sometime when we're not on the air.
Why? Well, no, now you've piqued my interest. Why?
It's just that I happen to be in the presence of that year of Lincoln. It was, 64 or 63 model. Must have been the 64 because it would be new. But it might have been the 63. The body style was the same. And it happens to be in a private collection. And it was identified as, this is Lyndon Johnson's Lincoln. And I'm just wondering if he was zany enough to have that thing repainted, reupholstered, and actually drive it himself.
I can't. That's interesting. I've never heard that before, but hey, who knows? All I know is that he ordered it up to Detroit, Michigan, without anyone being able, you know, no yellow tape on. And there's actually a picture that I've seen where the Lincoln is parked outside in the parking lot at Parkland Hospital, where they rushed the president to see if they could save him. And in the photo, you can clearly see a bullet hole in the front windshield.
a bullet hole in the front windshield.
Yep. I've seen a photograph of it.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. And I'll just go back to this. Now, I had a listener a while ago send an email and go, shut up. It's like, no, I can't. When I was looking from that little balustrated porch that I described to you earlier,
mm-hmm.
I was watching the cars come down the hill. There's a little curve, and then it straightens out just a little bit. And I thought, you know what? That's exactly where his car was in the Zapruder film. And the top of the windshield, anybody in the back seat, their head would have been above the top horizontal frame of that windshield. It would have been just like shooting fish in a barrel, seriously. And for one to have come.
The other thing is, too, if you were actually in the Oswald shooter nest, why wouldn't you have shot when the car was coming at you before it made the turn?
And continued shooting as it went past.
Well, as it came closer to you. You could have taken your first shot. The car would have then got closer for the second shot. Instead, he supposedly waited till it took that hard turn, and then it was going away from him. And if you've ever, you've been to Dealey, it's really quite a decline there. So you've got a target moving away from you and dropping. I can assure you that's the most difficult target to hit when those things are happening, when it's dropping instead of rising. It's dropping.
Sure, it's difficult to shoot at anything when you have to aim down at anything.
And not only that, how about the tree, the Texas oak? When I was there, they let you next to the shooter nest of the next window, and Gary Mack, the guy, was there with me. I was governor at the time. And I looked and started, and I said to him, well, clearly that oak tree, this was 10 years ago, I said, clearly that oak tree had to be much smaller 40 years ago. He said, oh, no. He said, this is a national monument now. They keep it as close to authentic as 63 as they possibly can. I looked at Mack. I said, you got to be kidding me. They want us to believe he shot through this tree?
Yeah, right. I guess they're feeding it cigarettes to stunt its growth, right? Unbelievable.
Well, here's another common sense thing we got to hit, John. Oswald's arrest, okay? You had the murder of the president an hour before it, the murder of Officer Tippett roughly a half hour, and then over a mile away here, they don't know who did it. At the Texas Theater, a merchant across the street saw Oswald go in the side because it had that ticket booth that used to be out front, you know?
Yeah.
And he went by the ticket booth and snuck into the theater. He called the police, and all he said to the police was, I saw a guy go into the theater and not buy a ticket. And the results were 10 squad cars, around 24 cops, and the news media showed up to arrest Oswald. Now, let's put common sense here. If you're that police dispatcher, you've had the murder of the president, the murder of a Dallas police officer, and someone called and said somebody snuck into the theater, what do you think you'd tell them if you were the police dispatcher? Excuse me, we got bigger fish to fry here. Don't bother me with nonsense about a 50-cent ticket to get into the movies.
Yeah, we got to just go kick him out and don't call here again.
Yeah,
I need 2 minutes here, Jesse. Or it's going to be Commercial City at the top of the hour. I got to do it. It's just two minutes long, though.
Go ahead.
We'll be right back with Governor Ventura in just a moment. This is Coast to Coast AM. Hang on. All right, let me just have 7 lines, including the title and 2 words. Military intelligence operative Richard Case Nagel. Nagel, the main topic of The Man Who Knew Too Much, was the veteran military intelligence operative who was tracking Oswald's movements. He was monitoring a JFK assassination plot, which included Oswald, exiled anti-Castro Cubans, and probably conservative Texas millionaires. Nagel even went so far as confronting Oswald to convince him he was out of his depth and being set up by some very clever conspirators. He didn't believe him. Nagel realized that he himself had been set up in the process, and that if he hadn't taken extreme action, he was destined to take the fall right along with Oswald. Can you address some of this? This is pretty heavy stuff.
Well, that was written, that book, The Man Who Knew Too Much, was written by my partner, Dick Russell, and it's a very interesting book because what Richard Case Nagel did, he walked into an El Paso bank, pulled out his gun, shot a couple shots in the ceiling, and then went out and sat on the curb until the police came and arrested him because he wanted to be in jail when it all went down.
Wow. Okay.
and then in jail, they actually found in his clothes the whole plot, with talking about Oswald and all that. But of course, that never saw the light of day.
We're down to about 10 minutes here, so I would like to get your take on this. Do you think there will be any blowback to anybody living or dead? At least maybe we can put a up a stone monument with the names of the conspirators, so that their names may be remembered for generations in shame. But otherwise, is the operation just going to go forward? We're not going to skip a beat.
Well, you're not going to get mainstream media. I always like to, because the reason is they've been, 50 years. I always like to quote Denzel Washington when he played Malcolm X. Mainstream media, you've been bamboozled. We've been bamboozled by them. Remember when Denzel said that when he was playing Malcolm X, you've been bamboozled. Mainstream media is not going to admit anything. They're not going to tell you that they were wrong after 50 years. And plus, you need to understand, our mainstream media is not a free media anymore. It's been infiltrated. There's tons of people. When the CIA operates, they usually have to wear two hats. They wear the hat of whatever they're doing, and then they wear the hat of the CIA. They do two jobs at once. In my book, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, I didn't say who it was, but I wanted the public to know that the CIA was embedded in Minnesota government. Now, their mission statement says they're not to be operational inside the United States. And only me and my chief of staff were allowed to know who it was.
Unbelievable.
I can only assume they're in all government, because I can't believe that Minnesota's the exception.
Where are we now? I see this country heading in a very, very dangerous direction. In fact, I think we're already there, and we're about to get out of the car.
Well, I do too. I don't like the way our country is in the direction it's going today. I believe, but ultimately it's our fault because we're not being vigilant. When our forefathers created this great country, it was with the aspect that we as citizens would be taking an active role and be vigilant. And, that's what I try to be. And now I'm accused of being a conspiracy theorist. You get accused of being unpatriotic. You get accused of all these things simply because you hold your elected officials' feet to the fire. Well, I got news for you. If you don't hold your elected officials' feet to the fire, you're going to get bad government.
Let's cover this real quick. I just want to squeeze all the juice out of this peach that I can. What about the Secret Service agents ordered off the limousine and the change in the Dallas police lineup for that day?
Oh, unbelievable. That was new to me, especially the formation of which the motorcycle cops were changed. Kennedy had been to two other things in Texas where they formed what they called the wedge. That's where they put the motorcycle police in a wedge right around his vehicle, which makes it much more difficult for any shooter to shoot him. Well, not for Dallas. First of all, when they got there, and we tell you where to go on the internet to see this for yourself. And I can't remember his name, but we even named the Secret Service agent who ordered it. When he gets on, when the vehicle was ready to leave Love Field, standard operating procedure, Secret Service guys ride on the bumper or on the fender.
Right.
That's where they're to go. And in this film, you see the Secret Service guy being ordered off the bumper. He turns to his superior, throws his arms out, palms to the sky, and you know what he's saying. What in the hell's going on here?
Right.
Why, you're ordering me off the bumper? So, and like Colonel L. Fletcher Prouty said, anytime you want to think of a conspiracy with government, look for the violation of standard operating procedures, because that's how government operates, be it the military or the regular government. It's always standard operating procedures. And when those are violated, that's the time the red flag should go up.
They're going to kill us all, yelled John Connolly. What do you make of that comment?
That's interesting. And Jackie Kennedy, the only thing she ever said was, they killed my husband. She didn't say he killed my husband. They killed my husband. By the way, you want to debunk the magic bullet theory quickly?
Yes.
Here's how you can do that. Governor Connolly has more shrapnel from bullets in his body than what the pristine magic bullet could weigh new. They removed enough from Conley's body that if you add it to the pristine bullet, it's bigger than it was new.
Well, that is a magic bullet.
Exactly. And no, it's a bullet that I just grew.
You know, it's amazing, isn't it? All these people, remember the people that came forward who said, oh yeah, whenever you shoot something from the back, it comes toward you. It's like, what? No, yeah. It goes away from you. When you shoot something, it goes away from you. It doesn't come toward you. No. He was shot from the back, definitely, and that's why his head went back, because he was shot from the back. I mean,
right, and that's why the blood spattering went in reverse.
Oh, absolutely.
All the blood flew backwards, right? Because he was shot from the back. When you apply science to it, it's truly laughable. I challenge anybody to read this book. I would love to debate Bill O'Reilly. I would love to debate any of these people and challenge them to please answer the questions. And, you know, we listed 63, John, and let's say maybe two of them are false. Well, that means they still got to answer for 61 of them.
Yeah, it's like I said earlier, if we looked close enough, we'd probably find 1,963 reasons.
We had to carry it down. You know, I could have wrote the book 163 reasons to believe. We just took the 63 that we felt were the most dynamic.
You know, I'm not going to be remiss and not put this on you. What should we do as citizens? What can we do to get off our backsides and stir this up?
Well, this particular thing, I let's take the bigger picture. Let's tie it in today with the government shutdown that we're
seeing. That's what I mean. What do we do now?
Well, the answer is as simple as the nose on your face, but it'll be as difficult as climbing Mount Everest. And you know what it is, in my opinion?
Tell me.
Stop electing Democrats and Republicans. Vote for anybody but them. That's the only way we're getting our country back. You got to uproot, like my previous book was called The Democrips and the Republicans. No more, and I call no more gangs in government. I'm for the abolishment of these political parties, and I have three great allies, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. In fact, John Adams said the downfall of America would be when political parties take over the country.
And that has happened.
Oh, absolutely.
So what do we do? Is it going to be a revolution?
Stop voting for Democrats and Republicans. You know, the late, great Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead had a great quote. He said, if you pick the lesser of two evils, it means you're still picking evil.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
It does not matter who you elect, if it's a Democrat or Republican, because the lobbyists and the big money people have paid off both sides. You want to hear another little tidbit about my bit in government? Why, as governor, why they don't like me too? I never took one dime of political action or PAC money or any money like that. And in my 4 years as governor of Minnesota, I never met once with a lobbyist.
No kidding.
Yeah, I walked in the first day and I told my staff, they didn't elect me, they didn't give me any money, so I don't need to meet with them. Lobbyists are banned, and you can tell them so, that they will have no access to the governor of Minnesota, so don't even bother to try.
I know you can't, but I wish you could, but I hope you'll come back.
I'd love to. You know, when I can do it, when I got to... The only problem is where I'm at. Like I said, I'm in New York right now, and it's going on 3 a.m.
I got you. Well, you're coming to Dallas.
You're a late night show, and it's okay if you're out in California, but when you get to the East Coast, it gets real late.
Oh, yeah, I get it. You're coming to Dallas around the 22nd?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
My friend Alex Jones wants me to come down there, but I told Alex, I ain't going to Dallas, Alex. I said, I don't trust what could happen to me there right now.
Alex said,
we'll get somebody to protect you, and I told him, Alex.
They couldn't protect the president. They couldn't protect the president. Jesse, don't start the revolution without me. This is Coast to Coast AM.